This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
All right, well, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. You can tell by the voice, I'm actually not Brian. I'm Jason Chaffetz filling in for Brian, and it's an honor to do so. I appreciate him allowing me to sit in his seat. Gosh, he's got to be the hardest working guy in television and radio. I mean, he does 3 hours of Fox and Friends, then he comes and does 3 hours in radio, then he does his weekend show, and then you see him on all kinds of shows. So every once in a while, he needs to come up for a bit of oxygen. So I'm going to fill in for him today, and it's an honor to do so. We got a lot happening in the world. You know, for 4th of July, we're supposed to be, you know, going out and enjoying the flag and celebrating families. But, oh, gosh, not everybody's having as good of a 4th of July weekend as we had hoped, obviously, with the devastation that's happening in Texas. Texas is not the only place, certainly the most devastating situation, but floods in North Carolina, other places, torrential rains expected in many parts of the country. It's just a sad situation. But there's also a lot of violence, a lot of other things happening. We're going to talk all about that. We're going to talk about ICE and the border and the attacks on ICE and the shootings that have happened. I mean, there were two shootings yesterday at two different Homeland Security offices attacking officers. And it's just, it shouldn't be like that, but it is. And we're going to talk about it and figure out how there's going to be some solutions to it. And who better to join us to talk about all the mayhem? When I think of mayhem, I think Charlie Hurt. That's what I think of. Charlie, thanks for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You could have introduced me by saying when you think of solutions, you think of Charlie Hurt. But I get
that didn't really – I didn't get there. I didn't get from here to there. But maybe at the end of this conversation, prove me I'm wrong. Charlie Hurt's one of my favorite people on the planet. Thoughtful, fun, loves his country, loves his family, and he's the host of Fox and Friends Weekend. You see him all over the network. He was just hosting today. So thanks for running upstairs and join us on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. You said you're sitting in Brian's seat, but actually I am.
I'm actually in Washington, D.C. I'm in Washington, D.C. today. So for those of you watching us online, which you can do, then I'm it's just me here.
I'm just absorbing the glow, the aura of Brian Kilmeade as I sit in his chair.
Now, there's a couple soccer balls in there that you can... Normally, Brian and I are in there kicking the ball back and forth.
Yeah, but, communist kickball, as I call it.
Yeah, it's the greatest, the beautiful sport. Beautiful. We're going to teach you... We'll teach you before, you know, the World Cup next year, the beauty of the world's most beautiful game. But we'll get from here to there. But not today. I kind of need to be in person for that.
Yeah, exactly.
You said something really smart today, and it caught my attention.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. No, I really smiled. I was watching you, and we were talking about Elon Musk and this. Oh, let's start a new party, you know. And then somebody said something like, "They're looking at the success of Bernie Sanders," and then you interrupted and said,
"I mean, it's amazing. What has Bernie Sanders been successful at? I still don't know." And they're like Politico is like talking about how Elon Musk needs to look at successful politicians like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. Yeah, I get the Donald Trump thing. Bernie Sanders couldn't even succeed in his own party. His own party rigged we're going on three primaries now in order to destroy the movement within the party. Donald Trump actually succeeded, and he's like a corporate raider who raided the Republican Party, took it over, changed it, and made it into a new party that I think you and I agree is a better, smarter, wiser party.
Hey, I'm just being honest. I didn't fully see it when it was starting, but I cannot be more impressed now. And like a corporate raider, didn't come in and just sell it off for parts and then walk away. He made it better. He took the parts that were broken and started really talking to people with honesty and sincerity and authenticity that you know, these Democrats, I look at them and they just, they fall apart. You know, we're looking at Mamdani right now, right? And we're starting to peel back the onion, like, oh my goodness, how did he get the Democratic nomination? Well, he's a socialist, and you start to really look at how he, you know, cobbled together some of these votes. But you also find out that he's a bit of a fraud. You know, hey, I'm a black, you know, from but Asian. You know, I've got to check every box you want me to check so that I can get ahead of somebody else in my college application. That's at least the way it came off.
And he's not just like some casual, like, socialist who sits around a dorm room like spitballing about how, you know, we should have like free health care. Like everybody wants cheaper health care, right? And there's some people who wind up, you know, believing in socialized medicine because they sort of go down that path. That's not, this guy comes at this talking about like distribution of wealth and how we have to ban all billionaires and take away all of their money. And we have to, I mean, this guy has really thought about communism and embraced it. He's a full blown, out of the closet, unapologetic communist, also a racist, as you point out. And I keep thinking back to all of the troubles that preceded Trump in the Republican Party. And you remember all this because you navigated it and were beautifully. The Tea Party movement that hit the Republican Party, it was very awkward for the party. It was very difficult. It caused Republicans to lose a lot of elections. It probably cost Republicans power. But if you think about the Tea Party movement, it with the Tea Party was trying to drag the Republican Party back to not only its own principles of the party, like conservatism and limited government, but it was also trying to drag the country back towards the constitutional center. And as painful and awkward as that was, the Tea Party recognized the Republican Party was the only hope for doing that. And they helped reform the Republican Party. And we have people like you because as a result of it. And what emerged from all that is a much healthier party, and it allowed Donald Trump to come in and do all the things that he's done. You look at what has and that crack up that happened among Republicans hadn't really happened among Democrats. Now it's happening among Democrats, and you have this whole we talk about it all the time. The only real energy in the Democrat Party right now is AOC and failed Bernie Sanders and this guy Mamdani, who is the Democrat nominee in New York City for mayor. Full-blown socialist, full-blown communist, that crack up is dragging the party further to the left, away from the center, and into, you know, dragging the country into something that the country will never exist as. I think that this thing that they're facing right now is I think it's an existential threat to the party, and I don't see anybody in the party who is smart enough and capable enough to step in there and stand up to that wing of the party and stop the carnage for them.
Yeah, I thought the rise of Mamdani in part was the fact that the Democrats, they put up, hey, you know, who's going to win this thing so easily is Andrew Cuomo. I mean, if you're the Democrats and Andrew Cuomo is your, I mean, talk about a flawed candidate from yesteryear. That's your guy. And I think it sort of personified to me that there isn't this young, vibrant, new wave of Democrats that's coming along to take on the mantle. You know, that's why it's always interesting about Donald Trump. He wasn't necessarily the youngest, but he was the freshest and he was the most authentic. And it goes back to the point I was making at the beginning. Mamdani, now as we start to peel it back, he's, you know, hey, I'm black, I'm Asian, I'm whatever you want me to be. And he's just smiling every step of the way. But you look at Elizabeth Warren and her claims about her being a Native American heritage. You look at Blumenthal, who's the senator from Connecticut, talking about his, you know, the problems that he had and being straight about his, you know, his military record.
Da Nang Dick, as Donald Trump calls him.
Exactly. And you have Vice President Walz. You have you know the nominee there. You have even Kamala Harris. Oh, I worked at McDonald's. There's no proof of this. No pictures. No nothing. No receipts. No nothing. But you know, I worked at McDonald's. It's like, hey, let's pretend to be what we think everybody wants us to be, but their core beliefs are so foreign to what I think America really is.
Yeah, they're such frauds. And the thing about Donald Trump is that he's never claimed, you know, he's built this coalition of people that are that are not billionaires, that are not, you know, New Yorkers, that are not, you know, you go down the list, and he doesn't really have much of an overlap in his background with a lot of these people. He's never pretended to be a construction worker. He's never pretended to be a Hispanic voter or a black voter. But what he does is he is straight with them, as you point out. And then and he's always authentic. And that is appealing to them because he's talking about ideas that people care about. And the thing that my favorite thing, and I'm so sorry for New York City that they're going to have to endure this. And, you know, I don't know how New York avoids Mamdani at this point. You know, I guess if everybody else gets out and everybody gets behind Eric Adams, which is probably the smartest strategy, I still don't know if that's enough to stop this tidal wave, but that's probably the smartest bet for doing that. Yeah. And I would give him at this point a 65-70% chance of winning. And if he's going to win and be the mayor, I'm sorry for New York City. But the other side of it is what I like about it. It is such a rebuke of Democrat politicians, the Democrat Party, Democrat philosophy as practiced by politicians today, and specifically Andrew Cuomo, who has a very long. No one doesn't know his record in New York City. That he was governor for more than one term. He was. He is a very well-known figure, and voters in one of the most reliably Democrat cities areas in the country rejected Democrat governance. They said, this does not work for us. Now, obviously, they didn't make a better decision out of that, but it's still a total rejection of Democrat policies. And I think that that's a very instructive thing. And I wish somebody smart in the Democrat Party would recognize that and say and stand up, have the courage to stand up to their own party. Because I do like the idea. People yell at me all the time for saying this, but I do believe that it's important to have a smart, vibrant. I want more parties that are sane. Having
more voices and have a vigorous debate. I bet that. Oh, by the way. I don't want it to be, since we're on this topic, I can't let it. I filled in for Elizabeth McDonald on the evening edit on Fox Business, and I'm going to do so tonight if you get a chance to watch.
Nice.
But we were talking about sort of the hypocrisy of the Democrats, and one of my favorite stories that we did last night is that AOC, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is now sort of backtracking that she grew up in the Bronx. She was saying something like that, but evidently it was, and I don't know New York. I never lived in New York, but it was Yorktown. And now she's saying that she grew up between Bronx and Yorktown. And that's where she formulated her core beliefs, because she was in between Yorktown and the Bronx, which just totally just makes me giggle.
And didn't, just like, and all of her friends called her Sandy. Sandy, yes. That was her nickname.
Sandy, yeah, from Yorktown.
Yeah, the great hip-hop artist.
Isn't that Jenny from the... Yeah.
Right, the great hip-hop artist from the Bronx, Sandy.
From Yorktown.
Yeah.
Sandy, yes. In between the Bronx.
Right. And
further clarifying where she came from, it's just...
Yeah, giggling.
I think giggling is the right term.
She was in Hamilton, but she was King George III in Hamilton. Great.
That's who she was. Yeah. That's right.
We should just start calling her King George III.
Oh my gosh. Can't you just be straight on your back? You run for a political office. I remember I was the campaign manager, chief of staff for John Huntsman, who was the governor of Utah. And I remember him saying, which is really insightful, he said, yeah, the best way to get your genealogy done is just run for a political office because everybody else will do it for you.
It's true. But can you imagine? I mean, it's hard enough keeping your own self straight. Can you imagine making up a bunch of stuff about who you are and having to keep that straight, too? It goes back to the childhood adage. Just like, you know, when you tell one lie, you got to tell a bunch more lies to cover up that lie. You're better off just going with the truth. But, you know, this is also part of it. The whole stupid party has built this whole thing about race and trying to divide everybody into all these groups and pitna, and it's also corrosive and toxic, and it's just like, no, actually, why don't you just talk about ideas that everybody like gathers around and cares about? And that's how Donald Trump stole the Republican Party and demolished the Democrat Party.
Amen to that. Charlie Hurt, co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sorry I'm not there, but at least you got to sit in the big seat.
Yeah, exactly. Good to see you, brother.
All right. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I was with my campers in the middle of the night. It was about 1:30 in the morning, and rain just kind of started coming through our windows. I woke my girls up, told them to close the windows, and then the power just went out. All the fans turned off. Running water didn't work. And in the morning, they gathered all the counselors who were at Cypress Lake, and they told us that two of the cabins with the 7-year-old girls were wiped away, and that all these girls were missing. And we went back to our cabins and, you know, tried to keep up good spirits with these young girls. Seeing little girls run to their parents and just like hug them and cry, and also seeing some parents who were looking for their little girls and they weren't there.
Yeah.
I was on the last bus to arrive. We all arrived safely. But that's just a sight I don't think I'll ever forget.
Yeah.
That is Holly Keat Hurley with just some of the most heart-wrenching, difficult things to comprehend. And she was on America's Newsroom sharing her perspective and her personal story about the devastation in Texas, and the sheer horror, and it's just so sad. I know a lot of people who are on the other end of this broadcast. They want to help, and so you can help by going to go.fox/TX flood relief. go.fox/TX flood relief. If you can help, help. It's one way to show your appreciation and help those that really are in need in a very difficult time. I'm Jason Chaffetz, filling in for Brian Kilmeade. More to come. Stay.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, this is Jason Chaffetz filling in for Brian. Thanks so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's off today and I'm filling in for a seat. And I want to give a shout out, first of all, to KIXR 1400 in Provo, Utah. It's kind of my home station. I'm from Utah County there. KIXR 1400. Thanks for joining us and being part of this this network, the affiliates here for the Brian Kilmeade Show on Fox News Radio. I'm really excited to talk to this next gentleman, because, you know, he's just an all-around good guy. But he's got some credentials, too. Not only did he serve, and we got to serve together when I was in the Congress, and he was in the United States Congress, but he is currently the chairman of the Dallas County Republican Party. He's also involved with the American Constitutional Rights Union as the executive director. And like I said, just an all-around good guy. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jason, it's a pleasure to be with you, and a shout-out to your hometown peeps back there in Provo as well.
Yeah, very good. Hey, listen, you're a Texan, and you've had some devastation. I can't even – I see these heroic stories. I see some of the status stories. It sort of brings out the extremes, right? I mean, the highest of emotions, but the saddest of moments. Give us your perspective.
Well, it's, you know – heartfelt condolences. I was just down in Kerrville 2.5 weeks ago visiting with the sheriff of Kerr County, and I have several friends down there. I've been in touch with them, and so I've been back and forth across the Guadalupe River down there. And to think that 26 feet in 45 to 50 minutes that river rose is just absolutely incredible. But even in these dark moments, we have to find our faith in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ to know that those people will find rest in his arms. And there are still acts and stories of heroism that above and beyond understanding that are happening there. And sometimes the best of us comes out in the worst of times. But what the one thing that is really disconcerting is how some of these leftists are responding to this. I mean, we had the pediatric doctor down in Houston saying that the people got what they deserve. I mean, that's just sick and deranged. And I just hope that we can, you know, take that type of cancer and just cut it out and not let it metastasize.
Yeah, that is sort of the disgusting moments that you have on this, and it's just so fundamentally wrong in what they've done. Here's Karl Rove, cut 12, about some of these Democrats taking these cheap political shots.
This is a cheap political shot. There's every bit of evidence that NOAA and the Weather Service had more than enough people to tackle this and gave the warnings in time.
I mean, Karl Rove's right. There's a time and a place to debate public policy. But while they're still in a recovery mode, for this physician to go out and say that Trump people get what they deserve is just, I mean, it's just disgusting.
Well, it goes back to Rahm Emanuel's quote, never let a good crisis go to waste. And unfortunately, they see anything that they can use to their political advantage, anything to attack President Trump, anything to attack the supporters of President Trump as a means by which they can gain some type of sick, deranged, delusional, degenerate political advantage. And that's what you see happening here. Instead of people sitting back and thinking about how we can rally and come together and provide the aid, support and comfort that is needed to the people down there in Kerrville, Kerr County, and the surrounding counties as well. So I don't understand how anyone could believe that this is going to be something that they can use to their advantage, just the same as we saw the attacks upon President Trump and, you know, quote unquote, trying to blame him for a lot of these crashes that happened, to include the one that happened in Washington Reagan with the UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter and the passenger airplane. So the left is always going to try to do things of this nature, but they take no responsibility for their degenerate actions.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, I want to transition a little bit, talk about the attacks on Homeland Security, specifically ICE, Border Patrol. We saw two shootings happening recently, and you know, it's one thing to say, hey, we need aggressive oversight, which I've heard Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader, talk about. But it's a whole other thing to take out this violence and go after and start doxing ICE officers. And, and I mean, you've seen it. You've heard the stories. What's your response to that?
Well, this is a good transition. We just talked about taking responsibility for the degenerate actions of your followers and the people that you're inciting to violence. And so, yes, we just had some Border Patrol officers that were ambushed down around McAllen, Texas. We saw that we had ICE officers and federal government facilities that were attacked over the Independence Day weekend. And where are the voices like Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, to shout this down? You saw Karen Bass, you know, out there saying that ICE needs to leave now. These are law enforcement officers that are out there trying to make sure that we have safety and security on the streets of the United States of America, that we don't have criminal illegal immigrants that are out there as murderers, rapists, assaulting even children and men and women and, you know, abusive people to women as well, like Mr. Abrego Garcia. But for whatever reason, again, you see this call to violence, and really and truthfully, by the definition of the left, this is an insurrection. And I don't understand why we don't start turning that language against them and taking the appropriate actions, because they are fomenting this violence on the streets. And as you said, the reason why these ICE officers have to wear cover and concealment on their faces is because they're trying to protect themselves and they're trying to protect their families. So how could that ever have happened in the United States?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely right. And, you know, one thing that escapes me, I've just never, ever, ever understood this whole concept and idea of, quote unquote, sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. And we're talking about the criminal element here. And that's what's disgusting. Let's play clip 19. This is Tom Homan, the so-called border czar, talking about this.
President Trump said 2 weeks ago, we're going double down and triple down to sanctuary cities. Why? Not because of a blue city or a blue state, because we know that's where the problem is. We know they're releasing public safety threats and national security threats to the streets every day because they don't honor our detainers. We know that. We don't have that problem like in Florida, where every sheriff in the state is working with us. So where we're going to send our assets, we're going to send them where the problem is. Sanctuary cities. So I've said it before, we'll flood the zone with sanctuary cities. If they don't let us arrest a bad guy to come to jail, they're going to arrest them in the community. We're going to arrest them at a work site. So we're going to increase community operation. We're going to increase work site enforcement operation. We're going to get the bad guys. So if they don't want to help, get out of the way. We're coming to do it.
What's your action to that?
He's absolutely right. And when you and I have been legislators, and we understand that when you declare yourself as a sanctuary city or a sanctuary state, this is unconstitutional. It is unlawful. It is immoral. It is unethical. It is all of these things, because basically what you're saying is that we reserve the right to harbor criminals. Now, Jason, if you at your home out there in Utah County, in Provo, Utah, knowingly and willingly were harboring someone who had committed murder, someone who was a rapist, someone who had assaulted another individual, guess what? You are guilty of a crime. You are harboring, you are aiding and abetting and providing support and comfort to a criminal. That makes you just as guilty as the criminal. You're an accessory to a crime. So why don't we see these people and these elected officials declaring themselves as sanctuary cities and sanctuary states the exact same way? And again, this is understanding the supremacy clause, and the federal government is law that says that it is, has to protect our national sovereignty, and it is supposed to protect our borders. And even if you go to the Alien Enemies Act, it talked about predatory incursions. And that's exactly what we have going on. So these people don't have a constitutional leg to stand on, and these activist judges, they really are on the wrong side of the law.
Look, when you and I were in Congress, we were holding hearings about this in the Obama administration. Yes. I remember there was one specific hearing that I was involved with, and we were talking about, we were comparing the number of people who were here illegally that had committed crimes and were released back into the homeland, comparing it to the size of football stadiums, you know, and that it was by the tens of thousands. They were these, again, the criminal element that are here illegally. So there's that. Then they, in addition to that, were committing crimes. And then they were in the detention of our law enforcement, but then they released them. That's what just drives me nuts is, And the rate of recidivism for that type of personality, that type of person, is just, it's way too high.
Yeah, it's Pavlovian. If you reward bad behavior, you're going to get more bad behavior.
That's
and
right.
The number that I try to get people to understand is last fall, ICE put out an estimate of some 600,000, 620,000 criminal illegal immigrants in the United States of America. The active duty end strength of the United States Army right now is 425,000. The active duty end strength of the entire United States Marine Corps, about 183,000, 184,000. So in other words, we have more criminal illegal immigrants by estimations of ICE in the United States of America based upon their report last fall than we have of our active duty end strength of our two preeminent land combat forces, the Army and the Marine Corps. That should, you know, that's very disconcerting. And that should be a number that everyone should be talking about to put this in perspective.
That is crazy. Well, look, the one big beautiful bill did pass. I do think it's going to fundamentally change things. I mean, the mm-hmm. funding to complete the border wall, to hire up the ICE agents. Now, you can't just flip the switch and suddenly the border wall's done. And hey, now,
yeah.
I mean, it takes quite a while to hire and then properly train and get some ICE and Border Patrol and others that have the type of experience that they need to be effective. But in terms of a legacy of President Trump, this will be, you know, as significant as anything.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, in 6 months, look at what he has done in basically shutting down that border, 97% to 98% decrease. Now we have to worry about what is operating inside the sovereign boundaries and borders of the United States of America and reduce that number. First, and like I say, prioritize these criminal illegal immigrants, the terrorists that are here. We know that the Biden administration released all of these Iranian special interest aliens out into the countryside. And that's the other big concern. And then we've got to get the operational control of the border. We've got to really go after the financing and resourcing and funding of the cartels here in the United States of America.
Yeah, no, the getting after the cartels, look, they're still going to look for weak spots. They're going to try to mm-hmm. go by sea. They're going to go to the northern border. They're going to be as creative as you possibly can. I still think we have to deal with the tunnels. Tunnels are not as evident. They're very difficult to detect and can be very subversive. And look, they already have so many that are in the United States. I think there's going to be a lot more that's going to be exposed. If I can foreshadow something about that into the future, I think that's absolutely going to happen. One of the best out there, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. You can find him on X, right? At Alan West, which is A-A-L-E-N, by the way. Did I get that right? At Alan West on X?
Two L's and an E. Yeah, two L's and an E.
There we go. Alan West, Lieutenant Colonel, thanks so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Jason, and God bless you and your family.
Well, thank you. Thank you again. We'll talk soon. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Except it's Jason Chaffetz today, filling in for Brian on a much-deserved break. Lots happening in the world. A lot of good things, some very sad things, very difficult things. But, boy, it is tumultuous times. But I hope you and your family had a wonderful, wonderful 4th of July. I did want to mention, I came out with a new book this last week, and it's my fifth book, and it's called They're Coming for You, How NGOs, Non-Government Organizations, Big Business, and Big Government are trying to push you out of the economy. The whole premise of this is that if you think that the deep state, if you will, is just going to allow Donald Trump and the Trump supporters to and the conservatives as a whole to just go on their merry way, oh, you have another thing coming. You know, what happened was Doge came in and cut out billions. I mean, highlighted tens of billions, then hundreds of billions of waste, fraud, and abuse. And largely, that was used for some very subversive things. But what hasn't been discussed, which the new book, They're Coming for You, talks about, is data. How is the data used? You know, I think most people understand that they trade some privacy away for some convenience, and that sometimes when you go to, you know, you're with your wife or you're with a friend or whatever, and you start talking about, hey, you know, I think I'm thinking about getting a couch. What happens? Next thing you know, you're over there and you're getting ads on your phone or your email or whatever for all these couches. How does that happen? Well, that's just good marketing, a lot of people would argue. What I'm talking about is how people are going to be debanked, that they're given social credit scores, how they're being pushed out of the economy. So if you purchase certain things, like let's say you go to a retailer that sells guns, maybe you bought a MAGA hat, maybe you did something like that, maybe you showed up at the wrong thing or you support the wrong group, there are those out there that want to push you out of the economy, and that is a very scary thing. They're also using data to affect elections and doing so in a very nefarious and concerted way that routinely supports Democrats and pushes Republicans out. Some of that is throttling back, so you just flat out never see something, or amplifying certain messages to certain people based on that information. Now, again, you could argue, oh, that's just good information, that's just good marketing, but it's done such an imbalance and used with government resources. I think people will be shocked when they find out how much this is used. It's used everywhere from the IRS to the Small Business Administration to Housing and Urban Development. Even the U.S. Marshals have been forced to do this and done so to affect elections. But your young people in your life, maybe wherever age you are in life, this data, this information, you're going to be shocked and amazed how much government is purchasing your data and how much government is selling your data. For instance, it used to be in Florida that when you went to go get your driver's license, you would put down your name, address, telephone number, height, weight, eye color, hair color. And in Florida, they would take that information and sell it. So you paid to get your driver's license. Then they would go and sell that information. And when you combine that with the literally tens of billions of photos that are out there, there are companies that scrape the internet. They grab every photo they can. So if you're on Facebook, if you're on Instagram, if you're on Venmo, if you're on LinkedIn, they're going to grab all that information. They're going to couple it together. And suddenly they got a profile about you that you didn't even know about. The book's called They're Coming For You, and it's out now. I even recorded the audio. Might want to get that. They're Coming For You. More is coming with the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks for joining us.
Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm actually Jason Chaffetz, and I'm actually sitting in Washington, D.C. rather than New York City at this time. And thanks so much for joining us. We're going to have a great hour. We got a lot of news coming up and a lot of good people who help us make the news and interpret what's going on in the world. We're kicking things off with Congressman, Chairman of the Budget Committee, Jody Arrington out of Texas. Congressman, Chairman, thank you so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Great to be with you, Jason. Blessings from the great state of Texas.
Well, they need some blessings right now, my friend. We, we're watching with horror and sadness and prayers about what's going on. You're a congressman from Texas. Give us the latest, your perspective, what's happening, what are you hearing, seeing, and what happens next?
Well, I have my family has a ranch about 3 miles down the road from Camp Mystic, which has been the epicenter for this disaster. And it is not just catastrophic, it is an historic one. Flooding happens, Jason, all the time in that area, flash floods, but we've never seen anything like this where the river rose that quickly, almost 30 feet in less than an hour. And it's devastated these communities. Obviously, it has just ripped the heart out of these families who've lost children at these Christian camps. And I know the governor and the officials at every level of government are committed in the search and rescue. And as the governor has stated, we're not going to stop until every missing person is found. I believe that. God bless those first responders. They're working tirelessly, and they're risking their lives to accomplish that part of the mission. But, you know, I would say there are some inspirational stories of heroism in the backdrop of all the darkness here and despair, right? There's the guy that punched the glass window to save his family, dying in the process because he severed an artery in his arm. You got the two camp directors and owners, Jane Ragsdale and Dick Eastland, of Heart of the Hills and Camp Mystic, and they dedicated their entire lives to teaching these young ladies about Christ-like character and sacrificial love and leadership, and then they demonstrated that in the greatest measure by giving their lives to saving these young ladies, as many as they could. So anyway, like you said, we're praying for peace and comfort, and we're praying for the safety and success of the first responders. And it's just tragic. It's epic in its tragedy, and it's hard to imagine.
Well, I want to remind people you can go to go.fox. You have to type in the word go, go.fox/TX Flood Relief, TX Flood Relief. And if you want to help out, that's the way the Fox and the Fox family is trying to get the resources there to help. So as I mentioned, what happens next? Texans have big hearts. They do things in big ways. And that's a community that needs to be rebuilt and taken care of. The president, I believe, will be there on Friday. That's the anticipation, at least. But you all are also there's more rain on the way.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that people have to take the necessary precautions is this secondary surge that happens often when the rain continues. And so, I would just reiterate that for the folks that are living there and assessing the damage of their property. And of course, the first responders are aware of it. But, Texas is a resilient community. They're tough, they're compassionate, and they're going to rally for these families. I know that a lot of prayer has gone up and a lot of hands of help have gone out, and that will continue to be the case. This is going to be months and years into the future, not just rebuilding the communities there and the infrastructure that was destroyed, but the healing that will occur with these families that just, like I said, their worlds have been turned upside down. The president was right to just wait until the search and rescue was over to come and to love on these folks and encourage them. And I'm so proud and not surprised that he's going to be joining us here at the end of the week.
All right, Chairman, let's transition here a little bit and talk about that big, beautiful bill, because you are the chairman of the Budget Committee. The president is convening his cabinet today. There's a lot of resources now that are allocated to important things like border security, and there's so many other aspects of it. The Democrats are always taking a shot at it. They're telling us that, you had Larry Summers going out and saying 100,000 people are going to die as a consequence of this bill. I mean, it's just absurd how to the extremes in which they take it. But, I mean, you've been out there trying to advocate, but now that it's passed, what happens next?
Well, I think the best thing for Republicans is that these policies have already proven to encourage historic, unprecedented investment, job growth, and economic growth after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 17. And we supercharged this by making these provisions permanent for our job creators. I'm talking about business expensing, the 20% deduction for small businesses, R&D investment. We had a record rate of repatriation of U.S. dollars back to the United States after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But every boat rose on the tide of prosperity, right? We had the lowest unemployment and the lowest poverty rates in recorded history. And on top of this, this is where we double down for working people. We had the no tax on tips, the tax breaks for people who work overtime, tax breaks for seniors who are on a fixed income. So this is going to be a not just a boom for the economy, but a boom for working people and middle class families. I mean, the child tax credit's another one. So it's I believe that the American people will feel the difference, especially after having 4 years of not just chaos and lawlessness, but a cost of living crisis. Prices will come down. They'll have more money in their pockets. And their quality of life will improve. And that's not even talking about the security piece of it.
So let's talk a little bit about quality of life and affordability of life, because interest rates have not come down. I think the president has routinely made the case that, and certainly the Treasury Secretary Bessent, who's one of the best Treasury secretaries I've seen in a long time, you know, they've made the case that to the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, why are you not lowering rates? In other circumstances, you have, just based on the numbers. But it certainly seems like, you know, to hear the Fed chairman talk about it, he'll say, well, we're waiting to see the effect of tariffs on inflation. But inflation is almost non-existent. So,
that's,
you
right,
know, it's been 6 months now. I think the president and Treasury Secretary make a more salient point. They make a more compelling point. Why not bring down rates? You're way slow to that, because inflation is just almost non-existent at this point.
That's right. I mean, who would have thought that in just a few months we would have stronger core GDP output? We had a little hiccup in the transition on the reciprocal tariffs because people were stockpiling inventory. But if you control for that, economic output is up, core inflation is down, the job market is strong, and I think you're going to see the positive trajectory go upward exponentially after this bill begins to be implemented. And of course, the executive order yesterday was from President Trump to say we should immediately and vigilantly begin implementation. So yes, there, I don't see any reason why the confidence of the Fed wouldn't be there to reduce their Fed funds rate. But the long-term rates are coming down. In fact, the mortgage rates have come down. And I think over the 30 years, it would save like $30,000 for families. The president's already cut about $200 billion in unnecessary regulations, which is about $2,100 per family. So things are going well early on, and that's without the big push that the economy will get and that taxpayers will get from this, what I call the largest, most comprehensive set of conservative free market reforms in America's history, if not certainly modern history.
Chairman, let me again switch gears on you one more time. I want to talk about these sanctuary cities. We were talking previously about, I'm just mystified that anybody would think that they had a right or a moral authority to harbor people who are here illegally, period. But here are illegally and committing crimes. I mean, that is just unbelievable to me. So ICE is doing evidently a decent size or big operation in Los Angeles. I want to play clip 13. This is Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass.
My comment is they need to leave, and they need to leave right now. They need to leave because this is unacceptable.
She's not talking about people here illegally or committing crimes. She's talking about ICE. She wants them to leave. And what is this threat that says they need to leave because this is unacceptable? Just wait and see. What does that mean?
Yeah, this is why the Democrats were thrown out of office. It's why they are still wandering in the wilderness. And I suspect Republicans are going to be in charge because for the foreseeable future, because people don't, they've rejected this radical agenda, which includes calling evil good and good evil when it comes to criminal aliens versus our law enforcement officials that risk their lives to protect us and defend our sovereign borders. Sanctuary cities, Jason, I've said this before, it sounds aggressive, but there's a law against aiding and abetting people who've come to this country illegally. I think all of these officials are in violation of the law, and they ought to be thrown in jail when they repeatedly rebuff the law. So this president's going to hold them accountable. He's already doing that. We've got resources for our Border Patrol, for finalizing the construction of the wall. The morale is up. We're going to give them a pay increase to support their families. I mean, a new day has dawned because the American people said, we don't want weakness and lawlessness. We want competent leaders, common sense policies, and a commitment to America first. And that's what we're doing. That's what's represented in this reconciliation bill. And that's certainly the posture of this president, our new president, and our Republican Congress.
I think you're right. Put America first. Love your country. Wave the flag. As long as you're fighting for the goodness of America, I think you'll continue to prevail, at least in the overwhelming majority of situations. There are some pockets here and there that are just flat out crazy. Think of Minnesota, California, New York. There's some pockets. But the overall, this is what the American people voted for. It's why they gave Donald Trump a mandate. I think you're absolutely right. House Budget Committee Chairman Jody Arrington of Texas, thank you so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Do appreciate it.
Well, it was my pleasure. We miss you, Chairman Chaffetz. We miss you in Congress, but we're awfully proud of you.
Well, thank you. That'll get you invited back. That'll be great. So we look forward to chatting with you again. Hope to see you soon. And stay with us. We'll be right back.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
He received a call around 4, and Aiden was asking his dad what he should do. That water was coming in the house, and he then said that he needed to help Ella because she was struggling to stay on the they were on the front porch. And he handed the phone to another friend, Joyce, and Joyce said they just got washed away. And then she said, tell my parents that I love them. And then that's the last we've heard from them. And the entire house is gone. It's just a slab left. So we're just desperately just trying to find. We found Joyce and Reese, two of the friends, have been found deceased. And now we're just trying to recover Ella and Aiden, who were high school sweethearts, my daughter and her boyfriend.
Wow. It doesn't get any more heart-wrenching and real than that. That's Tanya Powell, mother of a 21-year-old daughter who's missing from the floods. She was on the Will Cain Show. And as hard and difficult as it is to listen to that and hear her emotion, it's I think it's important for all of us to understand and the fragility of life. You know, they went to bed that night, 4th of July weekend. It's, you know, time to celebrate the country. Oh, we got big rains coming in. But come on, how many times have you sat through big rains? You feel like if you're in your house, you should be safe. There have been floods in that area in the past, that camp that's been there since 1926. But that whole area, that whole region went through, you know, something that we'd never seen before. Can you imagine a flood rising 26 feet in less than an hour in the middle of the night? A lot of criticism from some Democrats, and like everybody wants to find some rational reason to blame something. But then you start hearing the reports and you start to understand that, wow, the NOAA, which is the federal agency charged with weather forecasting, had more staff in place than they normally do. And that alerts did go out. And but there's at some point, you know, it becomes just so overwhelming, so rare, so dramatic. And it's just so sad for people like Tanya. Oh, more than 100 people have now been killed. Something like 24 people are still missing in that neighborhood of 24. I still hope they're in a rescue mode, and perhaps there are some miracles out there of some young or old person, whatever age they are, that is still clinging to a tree somewhere or just exhausted and maybe unable. But, you know, as a nation, some of our toughest times also make us the strongest. And I think that's true of Texas, and thoughts and prayers and hopes and everything else with the good people of Texas and the floods that are happening other all across the country, North Carolina. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, I'm Jason Chaffetz, filling in for Brian. He's like the hardest working guy in television and radio. I mean, come on. He does 3 hours Fox and Friends, 3 hours of radio. Then he does the weekend show, you know, Saturday show. It's unbelievable how much he works. So it's good he's getting a little oxygen, maybe a little sun in this holiday week. But I'm grateful to be filling in for him. And even more thrilled, the great guests that they line up, and we're thrilled to have Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor, editor-in-chief at The Federalist. Molly, thanks for joining us on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's great to be here with you, and I just have to say, I put up a picture of Brian Kilmeade for motivation in my house.
Well,
you know,
that's
when I think
good.
I'm slacking, I'm like, just I just look at him and say, okay, you can do more.
We would normally be sitting together, but I'm now in Washington, D.C., and you're the one in New York.
Yeah.
And so, yes, that's we've kind of switched places there. But Molly, thanks so much for joining us. Benjamin Netanyahu from Israel is in town, and he shared with the president yesterday that he wanted to nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, they gave one of those to Barack Obama just for, you know, showing up. But Donald Trump's kind of earned this one, hasn't he?
Oh, he's earned it like 10 times over, beginning in the first administration. Nobody has done more for helping peace break out in famously inhospitable regions like the Middle East, like Donald Trump has. But I'm not sure there's anyone who could do more harm to the cause of, not that you actually care about getting a Nobel Peace Prize given who they give it to, but
right.
Bibi Netanyahu is not the person who's gonna help deliver it to Donald Trump. I don't think they hate him probably even more than they hate Donald Trump.
It is such a joke. I mean, for the people who have won, it's like the Pulitzer Prize. Like seriously, like all the bogus reporting that was done on Donald Trump along the way, How they don't rescind those awards, how do people say and continue to put them on their resume saying, oh, I want a Pulitzer for this? You mean your bogus story where you didn't do all the research? It's just unbelievable to me.
Well, there are a few things, you know, in my older age that I was surprised to figure out. Like, one is that a lot of people don't want wars to end. So I'd always think, why are they fighting the war this way? It's not a good way to have it come to an end or have someone win. And then I realized a lot of people just want to fight wars so they can spend a lot of money fighting wars. And the lack of resolution enables that to happen. Similarly, with the Pulitzers, if you understand that they are given as narrative setting prizes, like, did you push a narrative that helped our political faction? Then you realize why they get it. It's not an award for journalistic excellence. It has never been an award for journalistic excellence. It's been an award for pushing narratives for one political party, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of disgusting that way. Let me just play this one more clip and then one more comment about it. This is clip 28, Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House.
The president has already realized great opportunities. He forged the Abraham Accords. He's forging peace as we speak in one country and one region after the other. So I want to present to you, Mr. President, the letter I sent to the Nobel Prize Committee. It's nominating you for the Peace Prize, which is well-deserved, and you should get it.
Thank you very much. This I didn't know. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming from you in particular, this is very meaningful.
Yeah, and that's probably enough, because you're right. That's probably as far as it's going to go. But I think that is the right thing. And if it was actually done on merit, that's where it would be going.
Again, though, like, you look at the Donald Trump approach to foreign policy, it is singular. It is different than what we have seen from both political parties for the last few decades, even if it's actually quite similar to the way America used to get involved in conflict, which is to achieve an objective and leave, not use the achieving of the objective as a foothold into a decades-long nation-building campaign. And there's a lot more to be done, you know, for the goal of not having the U.S. involved in conflicts that it shouldn't be involved in and focused on the conflicts it should be involved in. But he has really returned American foreign policy back to that long history we had of sort of minding our own business, but when we need to get involved, we get involved hard. And that's a great way of looking at what he did with the strikes in Iran, but also what he did in the first term with taking out evil people who were harming Americans. Like, you touch an American head, you're going to die. But that doesn't mean we're going to, like, then move thousands of troops over to permanently occupy your area.
Right, right. I mean, look, they've been used to dealing with the politics of appeasement, right? Think Obama, think Biden. And even some previous presidents, that was the appeasement. Hey, why don't you send us billions of dollars? That would make us more happy with you. But that strategy obviously hasn't worked. Let me transition a little bit. I don't know where you're at, Molly, in terms of trade and tariffs and those types of things. But let's listen to clip 23. This is President Trump at the White House talking about the trade deals that are coming up.
Mr. President, on tariffs, what happened to 90 trade deals in 90 days?
We've spoken to everybody. We know it's all done.
What's day 8?
I told you, we'll make some deals, but for the most part, we're going to send a letter. We're going to say, welcome to the United States if you'd like to participate in the greatest, most successful country ever. I mean, we're doing better than ever. And you're going to see these numbers soon. We've never had numbers like this. We've never had investment like this. We have more than 90. We're going to have much more than 90. But most of those are going to be sent a letter.
What's your take on where we're at with these letters and the tariffs?
Well, this is another thing. In the first term, I think a lot of people, the first Trump term, people realized China is a country with issues that we needed to address quite seriously, and they were an unfair trading partner. They are an unfair trading partner. The second term has made a lot of Americans realize just how much unfair trading practices in the rest of the world are affecting the ability of American businessmen and businesswomen to create products and market them overseas. And this is going to be it's a serious issue. It's very difficult for Americans to actually engage in the world marketplace because of these unfair trade practices, tariffs, barriers, et cetera. And it's going to take a lot of time and negotiation. And so that Trump came out hard on all of this, I think it, you know, shocked a lot of people, shocked the market, certainly. But if we get to a better place where Americans can compete fairly and squarely in the global marketplace, that will be good. Also, if we can return to America important manufacturing practices so that we can take care, you know, you can't even like make bolts in America anymore. That's not good from a national security level. Right, so right. It's all about achieving the right balance. You want to strongly promote free trade and also protect Americans from unfair trade practices.
Yeah, I've been pleasantly surprised how this has gone over. I was a little bit skeptical of it, but I am totally with the president on this one. I thought one of the more compelling points is, yes, in his first term, Donald Trump did the tariffs. Did Joe Biden and his administration take them away? No, he didn't. There was a reason why. So they can bark and scream about this, but let's keep going. All right, I want to talk about Mamdani because I know you're a huge fan. Molly is the biggest fan of this candidacy that I have heard in a long time. And I'm saying that with a huge smile on my face because this guy and the positions he's taken are just unbelievable. Now, one of the positions that Zohran Mamdani has taken is that he wants to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu if he came to New York. Let's play clip 31.
The likely next mayor of New York City, Zohran Mamdani, Democratic Socialist, the vocal critic of Israel and of yourself, and has said he would arrest you if you came to New York City if he was mayor. Is that something you take seriously? Or are you concerned about that? Do you have a response to that?
No, I'm not concerned about that.
I'll get him out.
Look, there's enough craziness in the world, but I guess it never ends. I mean, you have this is a folly. And it's silly in many ways because it's just not serious.
It's not serious, but he is the Democratic nominee for mayor of New York City.
He's the likely next mayor because he's the Democrat nominee, and it'll take a lot of work to prevent that from happening. He's very extreme, but I think it's also worth remembering that he is the natural progression of where a lot of Democrat mayors are in their politics. He's a little bit more than the rest of them, but he's not that much different fundamentally in terms of his devotion to identity politics, his extreme economic views, his hatred of the police. Like, all of these things are part of the Democrat Party platform, and he's just kind of the ultimate example of it. And it's why Democrats are freaking out that he is now the figurehead of the party, because you can just kind of point to him and say, yeah, that's kind of what we don't like about the Democrat Party. We think they're extreme. We think they're out of touch. And we think they're dangerous, frankly.
Well, and look, he has taken this position that he doesn't believe there should be billionaires. He puts a hashtag communists on some of his posts in the past on X, or maybe it was Twitter back then. And he wants to get rid of the components and seize the components of manufacturing, whatever that heck that means. He's taken
he'll do that. He'll literally tweet out, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. And then the AP and other people do these fact checks where they say, it is not true that he's a socialist or communist. He's a member of the Democrat Socialists of America. Like, it's not even really up for debate. He couldn't be more clear about it. But you've got all of these people, or a lot of people in the media, who are just running interference for him.
Yeah, I mean, like they always do, right? They always come out and say, well, you know, along that, it's kind of in that similar vein. You know, you had this CIA report, John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, with career employees, put out this paper about what happened in, you know, going with Clapper, Comey, you know, what did they do? I'm forgetting one of their names.
Brennan.
What? I mean, why is that not like the lead story on 60 Minutes and everything else? There was such a facade, and yet still, it just bothers me to no end that they will not admit it and that there's no consequence for these people.
Okay, so they're not covering it because they were part of the conspiracy, but what you just said The fact that they won't admit it and the fact that the conspiracy keeps going on might pose legal trouble for those names you just mentioned, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, because they have continued to perpetuate this hoax against a duly elected president means that the conspiracy is ongoing and crimes might still be ongoing as part of that. So normally you have a 5-year statute of limitations. Clearly, Brennan lied to Congress more than 5 years ago. But it was more than 5 years ago, so can you go after him? But because it's an ongoing conspiracy, there might be legal trouble, and we've been reporting at The Federalist a little bit about this, but there's a reason why you're not hearing much from Brennan, Clapper, and Comey right now, and I think it's because they know they are in dangerous territory for what they did against America and her voters.
Are we supposed to be looking for, like, shells on a beach for hidden messages? Is that the game we need to play here?
That remains my favorite thing about James Comey, that he, like, went to a Hobby Lobby and got, like, perfectly matched shells and then claimed he found them in this curious design that calls for the death to the president. Yeah, you remember when you were there, you couldn't criticize him. If you said anything critical of him, you were attacking law enforcement or whatever. And now everybody in the country, left and right, knows what a clown he is.
Yeah, and just the coincidence, we should be taking this guy to, like, you know, to Las Vegas or something. I mean,
yeah, that he keeps finding shells.
Twice. with messages. I mean, there's got to be a way in Las Vegas to tap into that sheer luck. And then to have a camera with perfect lighting. I mean, that's quite the, it's just unbelievable how lucky that guy is.
Yeah, so, real mystery.
It is. It is amazing. All right. Attacks on ICE. This scares me because the doxing, the attacks, we've only got a minute or so left here. But, you know, the Democrats are saying, oh, you're putting up in these face masks. And, you know, this is America. You should get rid of your mask. Amazing how now they're saying, okay, get rid of your mask. At the same time, Democrats are literally doxing these people and wanting to go after them and their families.
Jason, this is such a bigger issue than is getting credit for. And, like, I'm kind of shocked at the lack of media coverage. There were arrests of 10 Antifa members for the attack on a immigration related facility in Texas over the weekend.
Right.
And
right.
Antifa is very well organized, very well funded. I was pleased to see that they're arresting, because that means they're taking it seriously. The Trump administration has done nothing near enough to take Antifa and other domestic terrorist groups seriously. They have a siege of a place in Portland. And you remember during 2020,
yes,
Antifa
still
besieged
going.
The Marco Hatfield Federal Courthouse for months. And again, nothing was really done. And you have to take it seriously. You have to find out their funding and their organization.
Well, and it's still going. That place in Portland is still under attack.
And people live right near there. They're doing those, like, sound terrorism things where they have those where they're emitting sounds late into the night to prevent people from sleeping as part of their siege. And nothing's being done.
Yeah, that I hope.
Or very little.
I hope as we talk that somebody behind the scenes is looking at the financial ties and the flow of the money to do this, because it is a serious domestic terrorism activity. That is nothing short of that. We could have done the whole show, the whole hour, on just this topic. You're right. It's a story that needs more attention along the way. The one, the only, the great Molly Hemingway, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it and hope to see you soon. Thanks, Molly.
Great being here with you, Jason. Bye.
All right. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, I'm Jason Chaffetz filling in for Brian. And as we wrap up this hour, I just want to give note here that there's yet another book, and I'm sure there's more to come, on Joe Biden and the cognitive decline. I just, don't understand, never understand from the so-called mainstream media, why and how they now express this intellectual curiosity. This story was happening in real time. And for people who spend all day, every day thinking about these things, they just weren't doing their jobs. They were flat out part of a perpetual machine that was putting out propaganda in a way to favor the Democrats and be against Donald Trump. That was their clear agenda. And these books that now are sudden revelations, you can't tell me that the Biden administration was so closed and so good at keeping secrets that they didn't know about this. This is something that should have been there at the beginning. And they're a little Johnny come lately to do this. It's such a late stage. But nevertheless, I think we're getting more and more. The one to watch from everything I can hear from these insiders is the book by Karine Jean-Pierre. She does strike me as a woman who has names and was there and is willing to actually name names. That's what I'm hearing. Now, not to get behind or support her, but I'm just saying if somebody will actually stop going with anonymous sources and start naming them, it's going to go a lot further in my book. I'm Jason Chaffetz, filling in for Brian Kilmeade. Thank you so much for joining us. Hope you're having a wonderful day. Stay with us.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, it's Jason Chaffetz. I'm filling in for Brian Kilmeade. Honored to do so. I actually happen to be in Washington, D.C. rather than New York. They got some nice studios here at here for Fox. And it's good to be in the capital city with all the things that are going on. I wish I was sitting side by side. I'm not, because I think she's at the White House. I'm not 100% sure, but she usually is. She's the senior White House correspondent. Jackie Heinrich is on the line with us. Jackie, thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. And you know what, Jason? I'll tell you, you really don't wish that you were sitting side by side with me, because it is a really small closet that we work in down here in the basement of the White House. And even though it's exciting to be here, the working conditions are a little cramped. I can reach out and touch Peter Ducey right now, but I won't.
Yeah, just give him a slug. Just right across the cheek and say, hey, Jason wanted you to know that he's not in the house, but he wants to be there, and this is what he would want to say.
He's smiling over there as I'm and trying to get his work done. He's going to be taken over for the later half of the day. We split our coverage here, and there's a lot going on today with the cabinet meeting, so he's going to have a busy afternoon.
You know, Donald Trump does cabinet meetings, well, like most things. Donald Trump does things differently, and he certainly does it with cabinet meetings, opening them up so the mic can be open and people can actually watch and listen to what's going on. But any expectations as to what's going to happen here?
You know, it's hard to say. Just being completely frank with you, oftentimes these cabinet meetings are more of an opportunity, I think, for the different agency heads to give the president updates on their biggest successes over the time since the last cabinet meeting. So they tend to, I mean, it's great to be a member of the press in there watching it all. You get to be sort of a fly on the wall for, you know, America's board meeting. But they're usually over an hour, sometimes bordering on 2 hours. And it's, you know, a lot of praise of the president's decisions sort of updates from the different cabinet officials on the progress they're making executing on those goals. It's rare to get any big policy announcements out of there, but often the president will do a question and answer session, as he often does with the press, and He will, you know, answer whatever questions are posed to him. There are a lot of foreign policy questions right now. I'm sure he will be eager to talk about them. He's been eager to talk about those issues of late, and he just had a big dinner with Netanyahu last night where they were talking about the ceasefire proposal with Hamas. They were talking about Iran. Netanyahu gave a formal nomination for the president to win the Nobel Peace Prize over the strikes on Iran and sort of neutering their nuclear capability. And then you also had him answer questions last night on resuming arms shipments to Ukraine. So I think that he'll probably get a lot of questions on foreign policy, and he often is willing to freewheel and answer those. But that usually comes at the end.
So let's talk about those arms shipments, because Ukraine, Iran still... I should say Russia, Ukraine. What is the latest? What is the policy? Are we just not telegraphing that? Arms shipments, offensive weapons, defensive weapons. What did we learn?
Well, he said last night that we are going to send more weapons to Ukraine. We have to. They have to be able to defend themselves. They're getting hit very hard right now, and we're going to send more weapons, primarily defensive weapons. I believe that's a nod to the Patriot missile systems that Ukraine very badly wants. They need those air defenses. Russia is, you know, in the middle of a summer offensive, and from the beginning of the war, they've been really pushing for help closing the skies, because that is their biggest vulnerability, of course, during this conflict. There were some Patriots that were en route to Ukraine. I believe they were in Poland when the, and don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure they were in Poland by the time the announcement came from the Pentagon that all the shipments, including the ones that were in transit, were being halted as part of an ongoing review for U.S. military readiness. That announcement came as a surprise to NATO, NATO Secretary General, to European leaders, to Zelensky, of course. And then when the president was asked about it, he said, you know, we are sending weapons. What are you talking about, basically? So there was some reporting to suggest that maybe this was a decision that people within the Pentagon arrived at without a lot of coordination with the president over the goals here. And the other sort of interesting line that came out of that was that there was a concern expressed through some senior officials that perhaps the U.S. stockpiles were getting to a dangerous level where, you know, our own ability to defend ourselves could be called into question. That's not something that usually the Pentagon would be eager to broadcast to the world. But regardless of, you know, how that came about or whether, you know, it came about because of a genuine concern or if it was just part of a sort of typical review that needs to be done periodically and, you know, through all of the different anonymous sources that talk to the press about these things, it got twisted. We don't really know. We haven't gotten a huge breakdown on that. The big news at the time that happened was the Big Beautiful Bill. And so the president hadn't really been asked much about it until yesterday. And he announced that the shipments are going to continue. Big relief to Ukraine. And he's also been expressing a lot of frustration with Putin recently, his unwillingness to bring this war to a close. So a bit of a shift in rhetoric from the president. Unclear whether the pause really did have to do with diminishing stocks, U.S. stocks, or if that was just sort of a narrative that took hold. But he did not sound at any point when he was asked about it like it was a genuine concern. And my sources within the administration have expressed the same thing, that we're good on weapons. So they weren't surprised that this resumed.
Yeah. Let's transition here for a moment. I want to talk a little bit about the attacks on our ICE officers, law enforcement in general, but specifically the Homeland Security, that's ERO. And so there is a real concern about the step up and the rhetoric that's gone along with it. I want to play this clip. I know you've heard it, but it's clip 16. This is Caroline Leavitt at the White House. Let's have a listen. I want to get your reaction to it.
It's hard to believe anyone with morals in this country or decency would say such a thing. Obviously, the White House condemns that rhetoric, and we condemn violence of any kind. This administration is simply trying to enforce our laws, and we must be a nation of law and order. You cannot simply waltz across our border and live here illegally and expect to stay. We are going to enforce our nation's laws, and the men and women who are doing that are doing so in a respectful way. They are doing so within the confines of the law, and they are just trying to do their jobs. And we condemn any violence or any calls for violence of any kind against any American.
She was responding to a report that Democratic lawmakers were told to, quote, get shot. Now, it's a pretty serious charge, and that's a. But unfortunately, we've seen shootings since then. So it's just they are not clamping down on the rhetoric. They're amping it up at this point.
Yeah, this is a question I think should be posed to every Democrat in Congress right now. Where do they come down on this issue? Because I think that there is a split, and you know, you have the most progressive members of the party who are, of course, the same people who are trying to dox ICE officers and don't see any place for ICE in, you know, in the U.S. government. They want to basically make it go away. These are the same people as the abolish the police crowd, and then you've got more sort of traditional rank-and-file Democrats who feel deeply uncomfortable with where this is headed. Many of their districts are more moderate, or they're more vulnerable as candidates, or because they've been dealing in their communities with immigration issues. And so I think there's a spectrum of sort of reactions, but this shouldn't be a hard one to answer for. And what you're seeing is – what I think is most shocking is Hakeem Jeffries seeming to – come down and side with the progressives on this issue. I mean, pushing forward, you know, this legislation to try to make ICE officers, you know, identify themselves and sort of undercutting their ability to do their jobs, putting them and their families at risk, especially in this, you know, politically charged and dangerous environment where you've got these, you know, dangerous actors trying to set their sights on them, literally and figuratively. I was surprised to see Jeffries take that side of this discussion. And I wonder, as we get closer to the midterms, which direction this goes in. Do they go farther to the left or do they course correct? Because this is, you know, on many, if you look at the polling around this issue, they're out of step with how the majority of Americans feel about it.
Yeah, this is, to me, an 80-90% issue. I think when you have the criminal element is what we're talking about here of the people who are here illegally. But the big, beautiful bill put billions and billions of dollars into this enforcement operations. Now, you can't just flip on the switch and next week suddenly we got 10,000 more ICE officers. But, you know, got to get them trained up. You got to use what's called FLETC, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, get them all trained up and ready to go. But you also have money to finish the wall. That's going to be a major initiative. That's going to attract a lot of attention and probably some protest at some point somewhere. The administration passing of that bill certainly brings on the resources, which I think will get them amped up that much more because you had this confrontation in Los Angeles yesterday. And then you have the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass. I want to play clip 13. I'm trying to still decipher what it is that she means by what she said. Have a listen to this.
My comment is they need to leave, and they need to leave right now. They need to leave because this is unacceptable.
I mean, she says at the end, just wait and see, they will be leaving shortly. She's not talking about the people that are here illegally. She's talking about ICE.
Yeah.
How does the mayor predict and project that, and what is she basing that on?
Well, great question. I couldn't give you an answer to it. I think probably she's the only one who knows, especially because she, you know, the law's not on her side on that one. You just had the Supreme Court actually say that, you know, the president deciding to throw out the National Guard at the time of these riots was fully within his right. I mean, I think that that's probably a good sort of bellwether of where the law is going to come down if this spirals into an issue in other parts of the country. But, you know, I can't think of anywhere outside of California, except for maybe New York City, where that would be sort of the go-to response for the situation that we're watching unfold, is that you get the organized law enforcement out to allow more of the chaos to
continue.
Yeah, maybe Minnesota. We'll Minnesota probably has right, a few little pockets like that. But, I know. I hear what you're saying. Jackie, one of the hats or one of the responsibilities of a president and the first lady, I would add her into this as well, is to deal with these national tragedies and national, you know, we're certainly what we're seeing play out in Texas. I mean, over 100 deaths now. That may continue to rise, unfortunately. We got more flooding and more water on its way. I think they'll be awfully vigilant there in Texas. We have flooding in other parts of the country, but the president, I believe on Friday, is scheduled to go to Texas and do what he can. Now, the resources are flowing. I mean, that's part of it. Is a president needs to take a hands-on approach to make sure that all the resources and support, but he also plays, you know, consoler in chief, if you will. You've seen this play out before. How do you think Donald Trump and Melania Trump will deal with this?
I mean, I think that they are going to have a very warm reception there. He has a great relationship with the governor, many of the senators, representatives across the state. I think that he'll be warmly received. And, you know, he made clear that the aim was to go and let Texas know that the administration is with them and will give that community whatever it needs to get through this. The travel is on Friday, as you said. And I wonder how the upcoming weather might complicate things. Hopefully it doesn't hamper the rescue effort, the recovery effort that's ongoing, because, you know, looking at the images on our screen, even right now playing on Fox, it's just widespread devastation and so heartbreaking for those families. It's almost unfathomable. So that'll be a tough trip for the president and the first lady. But I think that he has said that it's important for them to know that they have the support of the White House.
You know, it's interesting. I used to be a chief of staff to Governor Huntsman. And right away, in the first few days of his administration, there were some flooding down in southern Utah. And one of the things I experienced and learned really quickly as his chief of staff is that not only do you have the victims, you have the families. I don't recall any deaths right off the top of my head in that particular situation, but people were losing their homes, all their valuables. But when you have somebody like a governor or a president show up, what it also does is provide relief of those that are trying to deal with it and the emotion of it as either a governor, you know, as other local officials, county commissioners, those types of people, city managers, they need to know there's a backstop and somebody that's looking out for them. And that emotional support is invaluable. Mm-hmm. It's something that's just intangible, but it's there for what it's worth. Jackie Heinrich, senior White House correspondent, do amazing job out of the White House. Thank you so much for dealing with me, especially with Peter Ducey over there. Probably he's got big elbows. He takes up a lot of space.
He's a tall guy.
Not yeah, but well. When he decides to spread those wings, it's just a problem. And I feel for you.
We get some great work done here. It is the highlight of my life doing this job, and if it has to happen from a closet, so be it. We get to see a lot of cool things from
Well, we'll have to get his side of the story on that. But yes. Jackie, thanks so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Stay with us, we'll be right back.
Thanks.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're going to be reckless with government, and this president has been incredibly reckless with the different agencies that we have to protect and serve us, you're going to get reckless and horrible outcomes, and we saw that.
Unbelievable to me. This is a Texas state senator, Roland Gutierrez, on MSNBC. Essentially what he's saying is that he's blaming the deaths in Texas on President Trump. That is so terribly irresponsible and just totally fundamentally wrong from top to bottom. The president has done everything he can possibly do to rein in the rogue government. We have seen time and time again, starting with, say, oh, I don't know, maybe the Russia hoax to try to affect an election, the lies that perpetuated out from the senior intelligence officers that was just documented by John Ratcliffe, the FBI, or the CIA director, with a career staffers writing the report. It's unbelievable to me how much they do. They will go to all ends of the earth to try to attack a Donald Trump from doing his job and try to blame everything, including politicizing the horrific things that happen there in Texas and saying, oh, that was Donald Trump's fault. Then we come to find out that, oh, they actually had more people working at NOAA doing the forecasting, that there were alerts going on. It's just absurd. The idea that you're going to blame a president of the United States for those deaths in Texas was just fundamentally, totally wrong, top to bottom. I'm Jason Chaffetz. Stay with us. We got a lot more to come on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, almost Brian Kilmeade. I'm Jason Chaffetz filling in for Brian. A lot happening in the world. Trump is holding a cabinet meeting in this hour, and this tend to go for a little bit. But probably nothing more important than what's going on in Texas with the relief effort, the rescue effort. Hopefully there's some miracle out there. I want to remind people, you can, if you want to help out and don't know what to do, don't know where to go, one way you can do that is go to go.fox/TX flood relief. TX standing for, of course, Texas. So go.fox/TX flood relief. And if you can help out there, it's just one way. Fox makes sure that those monies get to the people who need it most, and they're going to need a lot of help moving forward. But there's lots to talk about, and I'm really thrilled. In studio here in Washington, D.C., Julian Epstein, he served as chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee and staff director of the House Oversight Committee for the Democratic side of the aisle, somebody I knew back then, and glad that, you know, there are very good people on both sides of the aisle who really care about their country, and we may disagree on a lot of different things, but I've always appreciated his perspective and love that you're here. And you wrote an interesting piece in the New York Post that published on Sunday, How Trump Became Washington's Unlikeliest Centrist. Tell us where you're coming from, what your conclusion was.
Well, it's interesting, Jason, and thanks for having me on. Sure. It's great to see you finally in person. We've been on air many times, but it's great to be with you in person.
Right.
Well, the Democratic Party over the last generation, as you know, you had a bird's eye view of this, has become a very extremist party. They've become a party of the big welfare state, sort of the holy trinity or the unholy trinity, the growing welfare state that's bankrupting us. Cultural extremism on everything from immigration, even abortion with no limits, critical race, critical gender theory, and aligning themselves, at least parts of the party, aligning themselves with the Nazi movement in the Middle East. Hmm. This is a party that I don't recognize anymore. I kind of came up in the late 90s and early 2000s, and I was part of the party machinery when it was a moderate party. And what's happened is the Democratic Party has moved far to the extremist left. A lot of this has to do with social media. A lot of this has to do with, you know, sort of members wanting to become OnlyFans-like influencers where they can fundraise and sort of gain prominence amongst a small segment of the electorate that's online. What's happened as the party's moved that way is that Trump has occupied the political center in a way that hasn't properly been recognized. But if you think of what Trump's positions are, you know, a 12-week ban on abortion, centrist position according to all the polling, fair trade, as opposed to free trade. That's a position the Democrats took, most of the Democrats took in the 1990s when they opposed, majority of Democrats opposed NAFTA. Closing the borders, a position the Democrats used to take. Balancing the budget, cutting the size of the federal welfare state, position that Clinton took.
Yeah.
He took a more extreme position on the work requirements that for Medicaid, 30 hours a week as opposed to 20 hours a week. If you look at on down the line, economic issues, foreign policy issues, cultural issues, Trump is occupying the political center while the Democrats adopt this sort of very Manichaean, quasi-religious, anything that Trump does is bad. We're going to go into our primal screams and our sort of cringe street protests and oppose everything he does, whether or not what he's doing is the common sense center of the American polity. So, I mean, you look at what he's done on closed borders. That's American people support that. You can quibble this tactic or that on deportation, but American people fundamentally support that. Look at what he's done on the economy. Wages for blue-collar workers have increased almost 2% in the first 6 months. That's extraordinary. That's record-making. That's something that Democrats would normally have cheered a generation ago. But they're catastrophizing the tariffs, even though inflation never came from tariffs, as the economist class predicted. They're catastrophizing that. So it's almost become a, you know, what I call in the piece, in the New York Post piece on Sunday, a delusionary sense of messianism, the sense that the Democrats now are the liberators of an oppressive West. You know, so the West is oppressive of women, the West is oppressive of minorities, racial minorities, ethnic minorities, and that's the only prism through which they see American politics. And the problem with that is twofold. One is most voters don't agree with that. Most voters think that the West, and particularly the American system, has done more to uplift humanity than any system in civilization ever. It's done more to increase the economic well-being of billions of people, the Western model, Western liberalism, Western democracy since World War II, and it's done more to promote individual liberties than any system in civilization ever. And I think most people adopt that view. So they're out of touch with the sensibility of most voters. But what it also does is it drives an extremism whereby in this sort of quasi-religious worldview, anything that Trump does is bad and must be opposed in the most extremist of ways. You know, you see this with the floods in Texas, sort of the reaction, this is Trump's fault. I mean, really?
Right.
Really? Yeah. And so, you know, it's funny. When I was coming on, I was thinking about a conversation. I think it was a year ago to the date. You were hosting, I think you were hosting Laura's show. And we were talking about Biden. And, you know, I was saying that the Democratic Party had committed the big lie of 2024 by trying to tell people what their lying eyes.
Yeah, they could see it.
Everyone could see it.
Right.
But the reason that I think the Democrats could get away with it is, and this is a, you know, the ultimate indictment of, I think, where we are culturally, is that the news media went along with it.
Yeah.
Right? So the news media never challenged this whole thing that Biden was ready for another term. And you see the same thing today. I mean, if you just look at the catastrophizing that Democrats did on tariffs, you know, I don't agree with everything Trump did on tariffs. I would have approached it a different way.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I think he's a bad person. And it doesn't mean I don't support the idea behind what he's trying to do, which is level the playing field for American workers.
Right, right.
So I would have approached it a different way. So we can have an honest disagreement.
Right.
But I don't think he's a bad person for doing that.
Right.
But the Democrats took this view and the left, including the economist left, took this view that this was going to be a disaster and it was going to shoot up inflation. Okay, inflation's at about 2% right now and wages are going up. And so one of the biggest problems is the news media continues not to play an honest broker role. They continue not to hold the Democrats accountable on a host of issues, not just the Biden issue, not just the Hunter laptop issue. You can go down a long list of these issues. But they're not holding Democrats accountable for the things that are working today. You know, for example, when Trump dropped the bunker busters in Iran, I think this is the most significant move for world peace that we've seen this century. Why? Because I think what it is doing, it is denuclearizing and defanging a Nazi-like regime in Iran. It's like depriving Hitler of a nuclear bomb. That's the modern-day equivalent of it.
Right, right.
You put that together with what he did in Pakistan and India, where you had two nuclear powers that were on the brink of war.
Yeah.
Or what he did in Rwanda, with Congo.
He did not get enough credit for Rwanda. Congo has been going on for a long time. There's so many deaths
94.
There. Yes, 94. So many deaths.
It was a Holocaust. It was a million people that were butchered in 3 months in 94 between April 7th and July and April 7th, I think, to June 7th, approximately that period of time. And Clinton, you know, said that it was his biggest regret or one of his biggest regrets that he didn't do more to stop that. And so, I mean, you can go down the list of these things. And the Democratic position right now is this sort of temper tantrum, like they are kids in a 6-year-olds in a Toys R Us store, just screaming about everything that Trump does, regardless of whether or not he's doing something that is really advancing the national interest and that we can agree upon.
But the Democrats, what's frustrating is, okay, it's a one thing to criticize, but if you don't also come up with a alternative solution,
right.
And that's what I think is totally missing,
right?
Is they fail to make the mistake, and again, not on everything, but for most things, to say, we disagree with this, and this is what we would do.
Right.
It was like what Kamala Harris said. Yes, I don't like the way things are going with Joe Biden, but I wouldn't do anything differently. Okay, well then, so what's the difference?
Right. So what is your answer on another level playing field for American workers?
Yeah.
What is your – no answer.
Yeah.
What is your answer on closing the borders? You know, Obama deported 3 million – 3 million immigrants, most of all summarily. They had almost no due process. What's the difference between what Trump is doing and what Obama did?
How about the people that are the criminal element? Somebody who's maybe incarcerated for a rape charge. What would you do with that person? Because to hear the Democrats, they just released them. That's
Or this idea of sanctuary cities where local governments can essentially defy federal law enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, where have we seen that before? The desegregation movement. So say a Republican governor came along and said, well, we've got a majority ethnic group in our state, and they're going to start depriving everyone else of their equal rights.
Yeah.
And if you send in the federal – if you send in federal forces, if you send in the National Guard – or any kind of federal help, we're going to do everything we can to defy you. What's that? That's a civil war.
Yeah.
Okay, so that – so the all of these positions that the Democrats take now are very intellectually inconsistent with what they did a year ago – a generation ago. And that's why there are a few voices like me and there are the others. Yeah. You know, there's Mark Penn and there's Doug Schoen and there's, you know, Fetterman and
Fetterman really has – I've been impressed for a guy who had – bottom of the barrel expectations. He does seem to call, from his perspective, balls and strikes. I mean, he even went to a bill signing that the president had.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to ask you about something. You mentioned it earlier, and I wrote it down, and I want to make sure we get to it before we run out of time here. And that is, we got far too many members, and I've seen this up close and personal. They're more, and it happens on both sides of the aisle. This is not a Democrat-Republican issue. They're much more interested in their Instagram posts and how viral they can get their X feed going than they are to actually doing the work. And you see members just doing selfies at all the wrong times. And how has that affected the ability of Congress to actually do what it's supposed to do?
Well, you know, for all of your listeners out there, they should read Jonathan Haidt's book called The Anxious Generation, which is about how social media is distorting the minds and the brains of young people, particularly under 30
years old.
Particularly young women.
Right.
But it's having a similar effect on the political class as well, because it's creating a reward system that it's a very negative reward system. It's a system of contempt. Your value is measured by how much contempt you can express for the other side, regardless of the merits of the situation, regardless of whether can prove your position empirically. And it is driving the parties to the extremists, both parties to the extremists, the online extremists. And it's producing what I think is an OnlyFans-type culture, where your interest is in fundraising and validation online by a very small segment of voters who are vocal.
Right.
But it's turning most of the folks off, and it's driving both parties to a form of political correctness. And there's one thing we know about the American electorate that Trump diagnosed in 2015, but it's been diagnosed by pollsters as well, which is the American people hate political correctness, and they like common sense. Right. You know, Trace Gallagher does this all the time. He does this bit on common sense, and he's right.
Fox News at Night, for those of you that haven't seen it.
Fox News at Night, it's a great segment that he does. But, you know, the one thing that I've found, particularly after getting off the Hill, and I, you know, became very disillusioned with the Democratic Party, although I'm still a registered Democrat, but I agree with a lot of what Trump is doing, particularly Israel, I thought was brilliant. But the one thing that I found, and I think it's worth reflecting on, that answers your question, which is, if you stop thinking of yourself as a Republican or Democrat, if you stop thinking about what jersey you're wearing and you start trying to analyze each issue on the merits, what does the empirical data suggest? How deep can I study this issue? How deep can I think about it? And you try to arrive at your conclusions that way. It's a very liberating thing. And I think that's what Fetterman has done. The problem with social media is you understand everything through pictures and emotions. And you don't go deep on anything. And I'm a blue jersey, so I agree with Democrats, and Trump is awful. I'm a red jersey, I agree with Trump. Democrats are awful. And it's poison. It's poison in the American public square and the American polity.
There's a time and a place. Look, I do it. There's a time and a place for it. But if that's what drives your decisions, if that's what drives your attitude and effectiveness, then you've gone a step too far. Julian Epstein, I wish I could spend more time with you, but that's what podcasts are for.
Yeah.
So, yes, we can go a little deeper on that. But thanks so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, I'll come back and join you anytime.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Great to see you, Jason.
You can find him on X, right, at Julian Epstein. Pretty easy to spell, just like it sounds.
Yep.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, this is Jason Chaffetz. I've been filling in for Brian, and honored to do so. Very fortunate. Appreciate it, Brian. And I hope you're not listening to this program, that you're actually just taking a little rest and relaxation, because you're one of the hardest working guys in television and radio. I hope you're just enjoying some time. I don't know where you're at, but that's the idea, that you just get some time away. I am also grateful to have had published a new book. It's called They're Coming for You. If you want a scary read, if you want to understand how the deep state is coming for you and your family, and they're trying to push you out of the economy, if you just think that they are going to let you sail off into the sunset by supporting Trump and being a conservative, it ain't going to happen. How they use data, how they manipulate that data to affect elections, how you participate in the economy, are you going to be debanked? Are you going to have a social credit score? Oh, I think you'd be scared when you go through this. So Doge looked at all the money, but They're Coming for You, of which is out now. I recorded the audio version. It's on Audible as well. I think when you look at and read They're Coming for You, it'll be an eye-opener, and you'll learn a lot of things. 450 footnotes I put in that thing. It took a year and a half to put together. It's my fifth book, and I hope you're able to get it. They're coming for you. Last thing, I just want to say thoughts and prayers sincerely from the bottom of my heart for my wife Julie and I. We just, you see what's playing out in Texas. A lot of people frightened for their lives, fighting for their loved ones. and dealing with the aftermath. May God bless them. May God bless the United States, your greatest country on the face of the planet. Week. Thanks so much for joining us on the Brian Kilmeade Show.